and thank you very much for joining us on today's podcast session. My name is Ryan Morris, and I'm a contributing editor on the Penton Technology team. We are very glad to be joined today by Tyler Moffitt. Tyler is the Senior Threat Research Analyst for Webroot, and we're really glad to have him join us for our conversation today on ransomware. Tyler, thank you very much for joining.
Glad to be here, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
So I'm glad to be able to speak with people who know the details about this topic, because it's become very much a buzz subject. You know, everybody's talking about ransomware, and I think it's about time that we can get beyond the fear and what's going on in the world and start talking about some real solutions. So I'm really glad that that you guys have been doing some deep, in-depth research, and I'm looking forward to kind of capturing things, because I believe everybody would agree ransomware is an issue, and we need to figure out how to get ahead of this with our customers.
Agreed. In fact, ever since it first emerged in like 2012, 2013, I mean, it's been nonstop. It's been the most prolific, you know, malware everybody's talking about. And I fully anticipate to still be talking about it, you know, a few years from now. I don't anticipate it to go away. It's a constant battle, and we just have to keep up with them.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the most interesting parts of this. The amount of variability is... I'll say it this way. It seems like the bad guys are getting more educated and more creative. So I guess from your point of view, for like the sake of headlines and catching us up on things, what are you seeing in terms of the newest, the most challenging forms of ransomware that are hitting the market today?
Definitely exploit kits, drive-by attacks, if you will. So as far as explaining this in sort of an easy way to understand, I have a lot of presentations that go over it and explain to it, but malvertising, if you will, what it is criminals, they submit booby-trapped advertisements into the ad networks for a real-time bidding process. Facebook have it, it's called like FBX, Amazon has it, but it's, in a sense, I'm sure we've all been aware of this. Like, let's say you're looking at some shoes on Amazon or whatever site, doesn't matter. And you don't buy them. You close the tab. You open up Facebook or some other site, and all of a sudden on the side is an ad for those exact same shoes you were just looking at, you know, maybe even from the same site. But so what happens is cyber criminals, they're able to get their malicious ads and rotate them with normal ads on legitimate, highly reputable sites. And then users visit the site with an infected ad by clicking on the ad, and then an invisible iframe redirects to an exploit landing page where malicious code then attacks the system. And it does this through exploiting vulnerabilities. That's why they call it exploits. Vulnerabilities inside like a Java, you know, Flash Player, Silverlight. And that was Angler. Angler had probably the biggest impact, the Angler exploit kit, if you've heard of that, almost exclusively leads to CryptXXX, which is another big ransomware. They were the guys who created the Revton FBI lock. Angler was just recently shut down, though, and so a lot of people thought, oh, great, we don't have to worry about, you know, drive-by downloads, drive-by attacks anymore. Nope, Neutrino, which is another exploit kit, took over it. Little backstory, though, on the Angler, which is interesting. These guys were making about $3 million a month, and they were from Russia. And I guess targeting, you know, Americans, UK, Australian people, it wasn't enough to make $3 million a month, I guess. And they broke the cardinal rule, which is, yeah, don't bite the hand that feeds. They attacked their home country, people in their home country. They actually went after a bank. They got about $2.3 million, and then they garnered attention from Putin, who then, you know, got them arrested, and they're done. But Neutrino is a new exploit kit, took over the market share, if you will, like this huge drop-off of malware, you know, that could be used to attack systems. And it's basically better. It has the same attack vectors, but now they can exploit plugins, namely ones we've seen, WordPress plugins. So out-of-date WordPress plugins are now lethal to you as far as drive-by attacks. That basically covers that.
You know, when we talk about it, I understand why people get a little bit nervous, because it is remarkable the sophistication of the attack vectors, the development of specific solutions to exploit things that they know are just laying around in our computers today. And it's not like that was ever designed to be an attack vector. but they figure out a way to backdoor into that stuff. And you know, quantity of attacks is one thing. The pace of attacks is another. Zero-day exploits, you know, that's not exactly a new concept, but boy, it's getting more frequent. And when you're looking at it in terms of those, you know, whether it's well-known or whether it's brand new and just barely hitting the Internet, how often are the attacks as rapid as a zero-day attack, and how often does that appear?
Well, to be honest, I would say almost exclusively zero-day. And I'll explain that because other than these drive-by attacks through exploits that I talked about, there is really only one other way to get encrypting ransomware that people are falling for, at least. That's phishing, right? And they're getting more advanced. Phishing is by no means old at all. It's been over a decade. It still works, still the most effective methods of compromise. But they're turning to new tactics to evade detection, like using JavaScript to prevent you even leaving or closing out the page, using plain text to avoid HTML analysis. In fact, so far in 2016, we detected more phishing pages than all of 2015, and this was like as of like June. So, you know, we also saw that 92% of users have a chance of visiting a zero-day phishing site annually. So 92% of users are going to have one exposed to them annually. And it's difficult as a researcher, you know, if you're legacy AV, these sites, they're only active for a few hours or until a specified number of credentials have been gathered. And then they go offline and they're done forever. So as a researcher, you know, just trying to have like a static blacklist to block these really doesn't scale well. And you need real-time, you know, proactive protection to protect against it.
Which, and I mean, if you think about that from the customer's point of view, the end user that as solution providers, we ought to be able to sell them a valuable service to protect them from these kinds of things. The end user, nervousness is ratcheting up. People are getting more and more aware, and there's kind of this just don't click on anything mentality that's out there. But it seems to me that if I am a solution provider selling that kind of protection service, the value of what I'm selling seems to be more than it has ever been. Because like you said, if it used to be a static blacklist, you know what? I'll sign up for that one time. Maybe I'll remember it occasionally, but I'm really not paying attention. But if it's a zero-day attack every day and it's attacking everyone, boy, I'm going to need somebody that's there all the time professionally monitoring that kind of a service. Seems like that'd be a lot more valuable to the end user and a little bit more lucrative to the solution provider.
Right.
In that context, though, you know, everyone is a pretty non-specific definition of the audience. Within your research, are you seeing any trends in terms of the kinds of businesses that are targeted by ransomware, the kinds of users that get into it, and who needs to be paying attention to this?
You know, to be honest, you know, all business is susceptible to phishing as a threat, which ultimately leads to ransomware or all of these tactics. But we do have, yes, some trends. In fact, recently, you would think out of all the emails, right, and Google was number one phishing for, like, all time. Just recently, Yahoo displaced as the number one for phishing for Gmail, for, like, email login. And it's funny because, obviously, there's way more Google users than Yahoo, but I'm guessing that there is a, you know, sort of an index from these malware authors, sort of a savvy, is there a savvy user? And they know that Yahoo users probably don't score as well on the savvy index than as Google users on average. Of course, there's, you know, a spectrum for both. But they realize that Yahoo people fall for it as a higher percentage. So they're just going to go for the pool where they have the most amount of bites. Yahoo displaced Google. We also saw, that's tech-wise, financial-wise, we saw Wells Fargo just recently displace PayPal. And PayPal was always been number one. And we saw Wells Fargo. So another thing as far as the savvy, you know, computer index of Wells Fargo customers versus PayPal customers, they've obviously determined and they've trended towards targeting Wells Fargo people instead of PayPal. Also, Facebook's number one for social. social networking, and LinkedIn was second. And that's been that way for years. Just recently, though, we noticed Christian Mingle, for some reason, is the second now. I'm guessing they had an index there where a lot of Christian Mingle users are falling for, and then they're now the second most fished social networking site.